Maitreya Vacha. Maitreya said. Evam. Thus. Nishamya. Having heard. Kapilasya. Of Lord Kapila. Vachaha. The words. Janatri. The mother. Sa. She. Kardamasya of Kardama Muni. Duita, the dear wife. Kila, namely. Devahutihi, Devahuti. Virasta, freed from. Mohapatala, the covering of illusion. Tam, unto him. Abhipranamya, having offered obeisances. Dushtava, recited prayers. Tattva, basic principles. Vishya, in the matter of. Ankita, the author. Siddhi, of liberation. Boom him. In the background. Some of the word by word translation. Anyway. Yeah. Some problem with the word by word translation there. Anyway, translation. Sri Maitreya said, thus Devahuti, the mother of Lord Kapila and wife of Kardama Muni, became freed from all ignorance concerning devotional service and transcendental knowledge. She offered her obeisances unto the Lord, the author of the basic principles of the Sankhya system of philosophy, which is the background of liberation, and she satisfied him with the following verses of prayer. So purport by his... actually, you can repeat. Sri Maitreya said, thus Devahuti, the mother of Lord Kapila, and wife of Kardama Muni, became freed from all ignorance concerning devotional service and transcendental knowledge. She offered her obeisances unto the Lord, the author of the basic principles of the Sankhya system of philosophy, which is the background of liberation. And she satisfied him with the following verses of prayer. Interesting. Anyway, I'm just learning how to read Devanagari, so I'm just trying to equate the two. Anyway, so purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The system of philosophy enunciated by Lord Kapila before his mother is the background for situation on the spiritual platform. The specific significance of this system of philosophy is stated herein as Siddhi Bhumim. It is the background of salvation. People who are suffering in this material world because they are conditioned by the material energy can easily get freedom from the clutches of matter by understanding the Sankhya philosophy enunciated by Lord Kapila. By this system of philosophy, one can immediately become free even though one is situated in this material world. That stage is called Jivan Mukti. This means that one is liberated even though one stays with his material body. That happened for Devahuti, the mother of Lord Kapila, and she therefore satisfied the Lord by offering her prayers. Anyone who understands the basic principle of Sankhya philosophy is elevated in devotional service and becomes fully Krishna conscious or liberated even within this material world. So, Maitreya Vacha Evam Nishamya Kapilasya Vacho Janitri Sakardamasya Dayita Kila Devahutahi Virastamoha Padala Tam Abhipranamya Tushtava Tattva Vishayan Kitaksiri Bhumim. So, Om Gana Timidanda Shah. Niranjana Shlokaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shikurve Namaha. So some Tattva basic principles. Actually, there's something problem with the word-by-word translation. Anyway, Tattva Vishaya in the word-by-word translation literally means the basic principles of this material world, which is a different way of saying Sankhya. Because Vishaya means like entanglement or illusion and things like that, you know. Vishayavani Vartante Nehrasha Deina Vasavarjam Param Dushta Param Dushani Vartade. That word is used quite a bit. I mean, you know, Vishaya, someone's in Vishaya, someone's in illusion. Anyway, so this is Sankhya philosophy, which is basically the analysis of the basic principles of illusion. And actually the word Sankhya is quite interesting. It doesn't literally mean that. It's actually composed of two words, san and kya. That means sun. Does anyone have an idea what sun means? Remember we were talking about something that used the word sun yesterday? Sankirtan? It means put together. Put together, or it also means complete. Put together and complete. So it's put together a system of knowledge. That's what the word Sankhya means. Put together or a complete system of knowledge. Complete or amalgamation of a system of knowledge of this, basically the material world, and ultimately the understanding of Krishna. Of course, there's actually two Lord Kapila, not Lord, but two Kapilas. One is the atheistic Kapila, and generally those who comment on Indian theology talk about the atheistic Kapila, in which he came to the conclusion, you know, basically that everything is illusion. But then there's also the theistic Kapila, who we're talking about right now, who gave us this Sankhya system of philosophy. And Sankhya, of course, we're not following exactly the same Sankhya system of philosophy that's mentioned by Lord Kapila, in which he goes through the different material elements, Bhumi, Rupo, and Lo, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. And then he goes through the senses, the perceptive senses, and the active senses. Everybody understands what those are. There's 11 of those. Including the mind. There's five perceptive senses, including the mind, and then there's six perceptive senses, including the mind, and then there's the five active senses, you know, like the limbs and the mouth and the genitals and the anus and stuff like that. Anyway, so we don't exactly do that same sort of Sankhya, but we're also meant to utilize a little bit of Sankhya in our analysis of this material world. If we don't do that, then we can actually become sahajas, or take things very, very cheaply. Just like people comment also in Indian students or professors of Indian theology comment that, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement and Gaudiya Vaishnavism is a movement of, you know, just like illicit life or something like that, or sentimentalism. They talk about Lord Chaitanya being very, you know, sentimental or very emotional and things like that. But they don't understand that this spiritual emotion is exhibited when one is actually freed from the modes of material nature. Mamchiyo vyavicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samati chaitan brahmabhuya kyopate. One surpasses the modes of material nature. And there's other verses in Bhagavad Gita too what is that? Anyway, I forget the verse right now. But anyway, so there's other verses that indicate that, you know, the beginning of devotional services, one is ready to take up devotional service and one comes to the stage of Brahman. I mean, what does it mean to come to the stage of Brahman? Not to understand that you're the supreme Brahman, or to try to merge into the Brahman, it means to understand basically you are Brahman, subordinate Brahman. And then there's a superior Brahman and a subordinate Brahman. That's what it means, just to have that basic understanding. So therefore, in order to have that basic understanding, therefore Krishna in the Gita gives us so much analysis of this material world. He doesn't immediately in the Gita say, you know, always think of me, become my devotee. That's towards the end. Actually, there's two verses that indicate that. But he gives an analysis. I mean, there's definitely Sankhya Yoga there in the Bhagavad Gita. There's definitely, you know, now you're not the body. That's Sankhya. That's the beginning of Sankhya. And then of course, earth, water, fire, air, you know, the eightfold separated elements. Then there's the modes of nature in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Krishna talks about religion in different modes. So you can analyze. I mean, you can actually go around this world and analyze, not only, of course, it's good to analyze yourself, but you can analyze other things too. Other groups, or even other religions or other societies, you can actually see which modes of nature they're influenced by. And interestingly enough, because we're able to perceive what modes of nature they're interested in or they're influenced by, we avoid associating with them. This is very important because, as Krishna says in the Gita, karanam gunasa gasha sarasa janma jonishu, you become entangled by associating with certain modes of nature. And of course, we do have to go out in this world and have some sort of association with everybody, but we have to be careful not to take it to heart. And we can use things that's yukta vairagya. We can use things in Krishna's service, but we should not become entangled by those same things. And we can use different information, just like you can study books about philosophy, sociology, logic, history, and actually use that. I mean, it's meant to be used. Just like, I mean, let's say one is in charge of the Krishna conscious movement. Let's say one, that means me. Anyway, so let's say one has some responsibility in the Krishna consciousness movement and in charge, and you see certain things going on in the movement, like, you know, liberals versus, we won't mention, conservatives, Orthodox, Hasidim, oh no, that's wrong movement. Anyway, so you see these things going on, you see different arguments. So it's good at a certain point to step back and say, hey, this is the same thing that's gone on. You know, if you understand about religious history, you know, you have some information about religious history. This is the same thing that went on in early Christianity, the same thing is going on in the Muslim religion. You know, you have liberal conservatives, people with different opinions about the religion. I mean, the Muslim religion, for example, is really interesting. You have the Shiites and the Sunnis. And one of them believes that it's only the descendants of Muhammad can actually be the Acharyas. And the other one believes, was it Muhammad's son or something like that, or some relative or cousin or something like that. And the other one believes that anyone, you know, who's qualified. So it's really interesting. And so there's fighting, you know, between the conservatives and there's those who believe in the Muslim religion that all the women have to wear these burqas. And that's not something you buy in Saks Fifth Avenue either. Or in, anyway, some fancy store in New York. And there's other ones who are more liberal, isn't it? And then people get so angry with each other. I mean, just like in Pakistan right now, like there's some of the girls, they would like to get education, so the more conservative Muslims, I mean, they don't even deserve the title conservative. But anyway, I'm not going to find fault. The more conservative ones actually are burning down the schools, the girls' schools, so the girls can't go to the school. And if they, when they get really radical, forget about conservative, radical, if the girl tries to go to the school, they throw acid in her face or something like that and blind her. Because then, you know, this is like ultra-conservativism. And then the liberals, you know, anything goes. You know, you see the Muslims at the nightclubs. There was an interview with two Muslims, you know, in a gay bar the other day that I saw. Really interesting. So you see, in other words, you see this like this conflict going on, and this tension. And there's always these tensions, you know. It's really interesting because we're in a world of duality, or sometimes I think we're in the world of triality or quadrality. You know, so, you know, usually there's a tension between two opposite poles, but actually sometimes it's three opposite poles or 10 opposite poles. But so you see these things going on in various religious societies, and you see all sorts of structural struggling politics and this and that. So actually, we're meant to learn from our observation of the material world. That's the point about Sankhya, actually. We're meant to learn by observing this material world. That's not, even in the Bhagavatam, there's that story of the Avadhuta Brahman who was learning by looking at a prostitute. Not that he meditated on her, but, you know. Meditate on, you know, he saw her with Pingala, you know the story. Pingala, the prostitute, she became detached because no one loved her at any price, even though she accepted credit cards and had one of those swipe machines for credit cards. But anyway, she had a kiosk. Anyway, you know, you learn. And then, you know, some devotees say, well, we shouldn't. You know, we shouldn't learn from these things. We should just, like, you know, fight with each other. But, you know, Hare Krishna, or you learn from sociology, you know, like, you study groups, and there's closed organizations and open organizations, and all organizations have a gatekeeper to them. A gatekeeper means one who actually controls what comes in and what goes out. Anyway, I'm not going to get into the sociological ramifications of that. But the point is, you study these things and you see, hey, ISKCON's going through the same thing. And then you're able to, then you're actually able to, you know, help ISKCON intelligently instead of just like trying to reinvent the wheel. That is one of the problems the devotees have, is they don't understand Sankhya. That is the analysis of matter. Knowledge of matter. It's not just like earth, water, fire, air, ether, intelligence, mind, intelligence, false ego, you know, three modes of nature. But it's, you know, the devotee should be very intelligent in their understanding of matter because it does function. I mean, whether you're a devotee or a non-devotee, what goes up must come down. You know, whether you're a devotee or a non-devotee, wearing a seatbelt actually helps if you get in an accident. Right? I mean, at least as far as I know. Just like we had two devotees who got in an automobile accident, and they were wearing seatbelts, and it protected them. They would have, you know, who knows what would have happened had they not been wearing seatbelts. So, you know, whether you're a devotee or non-devotee. I mean, of course, sometimes there's exceptions, and, you know, Krishna changes the way the material energy acts, like if you happen to be Prahlad Maharaj, you know, and, you know, your father throws you off a cliff. But I think if we threw most devotees off a cliff, you would end up with devotee pie at the bottom, you know. Isn't it? I mean, I would think so. I mean, if I threw a purva off the cliff, I don't think Krishna would come down and catch you and Garuda would take you in the air. Maybe he would, and I'm just committing a big offense. But anyway, but it's, you know, that's the way the material energy functions. Yeah, that's it. That's it, you know, and so you should be aware, the point I'm making is you should be, and also the Upanishad states the same thing, that one has to understand vidya and avidya. So this is the same word used here in the purport, in the verse, I'm sorry. that it says, not the same word, but avidya and vishaya are pretty much similar. So you have to actually analyze. You have to understand very carefully. Like Prabhupada, he was very expert in this material energy, and therefore, you know, therefore he was able to push forward the movement. He was expert in management. And so, and even his godbrothers, sometimes they would criticize him for that. They would say the only reason that he spread the movement, well, first of all, they gave one other reason, is he liked to associate with those low-class people. You know, it's like Prabhupada said, someone may be a Supreme Court judge, but, you know, he's not getting any salary. In other words, if you're envious of someone, then you can say any damn thing to just, you know, to give a reason why they're successful. Oh, it's just luck. No. Srila Prabhupada, two things, you know, Prabhupada, of course, had Krishna Shakti. Obviously, that's the most important thing, Krishna Shakti. But aside from that, or in addition to that, Prabhupada was extremely expert in this material world. Very expert. I mean, look at how Prabhupada produced his books. I mean, Prabhupada practically had to do all the layout of his books. He had to transport the paper to the, you know, to the printer, supervise everything. Prabhupada probably did almost everything except for running the printing press, collecting the money. That's what Prabhupada said. Prabhupada said the devotees should become expert in things. Prabhupada said they shouldn't be, because if you're not expert in all these different things, then you become overly dependent and you can't accomplish a lot. Then you become dependent on the ordinary course. But one of the qualities of a devotee is not dependent on the ordinary course of events. He can actually do things. He can learn things. He's open. He's not blaming others for his failure. I mean, that's a big thing nowadays when they have these self-help courses. They say, you know, we always, you know, we blame others for our failure. You know, that's called, of course, in NBC language, denial. You know, I'm angry because of you. Or I'm a failure because of you. Like that. But a devotee should become, I mean, Prabhupada just didn't give up. When he had so much opposition, when the Jhansi program was taken away, when the Bull Gordon in the street, when his godbrothers, you know, wouldn't even give enough money practically for a dhoti. You know, Prabhupada just said, he didn't blame them, said, oh, these stupid godbrothers, the reason I'm not successful is because of these godbrothers. Did he do that? No, he just like, he took the, I don't want to say bull by the horns, but anyway, that's not exactly a Krishna conscious expression. But he just like became, he was an empowered personality. He knew how to do things. All right, you're not going to help me publish. I'm going to raise my own money. I'm going to publish myself. You know, I'm going to do all these things because Prabhupada was expert. So the point I'm making is that, that's a big reason why Prabhupada was able to spread Krishna consciousness, because he didn't blame others for his, you know, for anything. You know, he just like understood it was Krishna, and Krishna was empowering. Krishna says he's the intelligence of men. Krishna says the order of the spiritual master is the success potency. But Prabhupada had faith in all those things, and he was empowered to do miracles because of that faith. And also because of his knowledge of the material world. So the point I'm making is that Sankhya for us means that we should become intelligent about this material world. And of course, we take shelter of Krishna's holy names. Yes, I understand that, but we're not meant to be Babaji's. That's not our process, to be Babaji's. Our process is to spread the movement. That means we become very, we should learn different skills, be able to see things from a different perspective. You see the conservatives and the liberals, so-called liberals, so-called conservatives, arguing in our movement, you know. Yes, everyone should wear dhotis 24 hours a day. You know, that's the conservatives. And the liberals, no one should wear dhotis anywhere, anytime. You know, dhotis are not Vedic. That's the liberals. and the conservatives are, it's devotional dress. Everything else is carmy dress. That's interesting, you know. I mean, it's like carmy clothes. I mean, just that expression is quite funny. It's like the clothes you put on the clothes and you get karma or something like that. Isn't it a ridiculous expression? I mean, they're actually, you know, they're just like clothes. You can say, what, you know, they're clothes that fit in with Western society, all right? Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, there's so many Muslims that attacked Hindu temples and burnt them down. They were wearing dhotis when they were doing that. So it's not, anyway, so you get these liberals concerned. So you look at this, you should look at it from a different perspective. And you don't have to get into the fray. You know, just like recently there was some discussion on the internet about something, I won't mention what it was. But it was one of those things, you know, liberals versus conservative things on the internet. And I was watching, you know, as, I mean, you didn't see the GBC conference. I mean, that really got heated. That really got heated. I mean, you just saw you know, you read Chakra Dandabhat, you saw some external thing, you know, going on. But the GBC conference was really heated. Don't move without our permission. You know, so... But even apart from the liberal versus conservative argument, it's important to understand the dynamics of communication. You know, just like if you read it, books about internet, communication on the internet, you'll find out ABC, internet communication when dealing with conflicts, exacerbates the conflict. ABC. Duh. As they say nowadays, isn't it? Duh. That's a modern expression. Duh means like, that's a no-brainer. So anyway, so you understand these things. And also, you know, hey, what happened to Vaishnav etiquette? You know, what happened to, you know, public arguments about things? So you look at it from a different perspective and you don't get into the fray. You just like, Just like someone sent me a letter the other day challenging me to an argument about just something I did in the past. I'll mention what it was. I said, years and years ago, before any of you were born, I was temple president in Miami, and you know, I sold the Miami temple, and we bought a hotel in Miami Beach, you know. Anyway, so it was a nice temple, it was beautiful and everything like that. So one devotee sent me a letter. You rascal. You know, he just sent me a letter like 40 years after it happened. But he said, you rascal, how can you show your face in front of Prabhupada that you sold this temple? So he was expecting me to defend myself, you know. So I just wrote a letter back. I said, yes, I made a mistake. I'm repenting. Instead of getting into a whole argument, you know, I had good intentions. It was this person's fault, that person's fault. It was the GBC's fault. You know, they didn't carry through on their end of the... And, you know, I have all these arguments to excuse all my errors. And we always have arguments to excuse any mistake we made. You know, it was that person's fault. It was Mother Krishna Priya's fault because she was my secretary at that time, so... Talk to her, don't talk to me. So anyway, it was her idea, you know. So instead, you know, I just understood a little bit about dealing, the point I'm making about dealing on the internet, how you deal on the internet. Because you can get into these long, long discussions, you know, and people send me letters all the time telling me how nasty and ugly and everything else I am. And I just empathize with them. Instead of like fighting, I just say, yes, you have a need for handsomeness. would you be willing to communicate with someone who is more WAPO? You know, that's... I know, I'm just joking. No one says those things. But so the point is, if you use it, you know, if you have some material knowledge, you can save so much of Krishna's time. You know, and you know, just like in the beginning of the movement, we thought, you know, anybody could teach the children. You just had to chant Hare Krishna nicely and you could become a teacher, you know. But it's important to acquire the knowledge of teaching and skills, isn't it? You know, the management skills, you know, anybody can manage a temple. So many people manage temples off cliffs. You know, it's just like, you know, just you can chant Hare Krishna, you can manage like a $10 million project. Anyway, so, we need to know about this material world. That's the whole point I'm making in this class, is that we need to know about the modes of nature, the stuff in the Bhagavad Gita, obviously, so we can stay pure. You know, that's obvious. You know, why did Prabhupada say, you know, don't eat food cooked by people who are not Krishna conscious? Because of the modes of nature. Basically that. It's basically that. So we need to understand, you know, food in the mode of ignorance, food in the mode of passion, food in the mode of goodness, determination in the mode of passion, ignorance, goodness. We need to analyze, you know, apply it to ourselves, actually. So we need to understand Sankhya. That's the point I'm making, on all different levels, in order to push forward the Krishna consciousness movement. Unless you're going to just be a Babaji. And even if you are Babaji, you've got to be a little introspective because you're going to be thinking of, you know, illicit life as you're chanting Hare Krishna, unless you're introspective with the modes of nature and apply them in your own heart, in your own consciousness, in your own mind. So, but if you're going to do more than be a Babaji, you have to really become expert in this material world and apply Sankhya. Because Sankhya, in a larger sense, means to understand the material nature and how it functions. Not just that, you know, the analysis of the 24 elements that Lord Kapiladev gave, but to understand exactly how to do things in this material world. And Prabhupada was expert in all these different types of sankhya. So any questions or comments about these points? Yeah.
I was just wondering how to find the balance, because it seems like you could go overboard too.
Yes, you can definitely go overboard. What I find is that if one has good sadhana, the balance is likely to be there. One reads every day and does, you know, a little bit of puja. Not pooj, but puja. But we may also do pooj, but puja. You know, that's what I find. Like, if I'm able to, I mean, I'm studying so many things, everybody knows that completely in Maya. But anyway, but you know, my life is nice. I go to the morning program every morning. I chant my rounds, my Hare Krishna mantras. And, you know, now I'm doing this little puja for Govardhan every morning. I listen to at least one class every day, and not two classes, on philosophy, you know, Prabhupada or some other devotee giving the class. And so then I don't find my mind wanders into any of these things. It's just like I'm able to see, you know, when I'm able to take the information. And I'm not saying I'm like a swan, but we have to have the swan's intelligence of being able to take things from a filthy place and see the good stuff and see, you know, just like we study this NVC. I mean, there's a lot of stuff there that's really not so great for Krishna consciousness, like the touchy-feely stuff where everybody does a group embrace and, you know, I won't even mention things that go on, you know. And, you know, the Buddhist philosophy, we're all one, you know. Just like I was talking to some of the people when I was going to the seminar, I said, you know, God's a person. And they said, well, what kind of primitive thought is that? And then I, you know, had a whole discussion, you know, primitive. Anyway, we discussed. So anyway, there is a tendency to become influenced by different things. But I think if one has really strong, I mean, Krishna conscious sadhana, according to the way Prabhupada taught us, especially hearing, then my feeling is, in my experience, is then you're able to deal with so many aspects of the material energy and really be focused on Krishna all day long. But it's important, and it's also important to hear at night, too, before you go to sleep. Like Prabhupada gave us Krishna book to read at night, so I try every night to read some Krishna katha, not some philosophy so much, because philosophy you can't dream about.
It's hard to dream. I'm not the body. How am I going to dream that one? Oh, flying through the air. Sorry. Anyway, so it's hard to have dreams about how you're not the body. You know, I guess you could, you know, leaving your body at the time of death or something like that. But, you know, you dream about Krishna's, you read about Krishna's pastime, and then you can actually think about it while you're sleeping, process it, isn't it? Because there's different stages of sleep. You know, you're processing what you had during the day, and, you know, planning out what you're going to do the next day, et cetera, et cetera. So so that helps, you know, just to have it like a sandwich in the morning and in the evening. Like, sometimes it used to be called ISKCON sandwich, isn't it? You know, morning and evening. That's what Prabhupada, like the evening program. But I know, you know, people generally can't go now because they're busy doing a million things like me. But if you but if you actually have some Krishna Katha at the end of the day and Krishna Katha in the beginning of the day, and, you know, intense sadhana, then I think you can balance it. But still, you have to be careful. You have to be careful what you're doing. But it's really important to understand that even as devotees, even though we're in the Krishna conscious movement, we're actually functioning exactly the same sociologically as any other religion has since time immemorial. Whether you like it or not, you know, we're not an exception. You know, and psychologically too, same things are going on. You know, so it's just, we're just not exceptions to that. We're exceptions spiritually, yes, but that's transcendental. But sociologically, you see exactly the same things going on in ISKCON. I mean, we even have our Galileos in the movement. Who's Galileo? Yeah, I know, but what was the history? Does anyone remember? No one remembers. Yeah, he was brought in science, and the church was, you know, the church was against him. So we have people who, like, bring in science in the church. Our church goes against them. So we have one devotee was telling me the other day, he said, I'm the modern-day Galileo. And I said to him, I won't mention who it was, I said to him, you are not that prominent, you know, come on.